I want to welcome a friend of ours, and indeed a very significant, he's a friend indeed to many, not only in the Irish community, but he is Senior Vice President of Wealth Management. Boy, that doesn't have much to, none of that rubbed off on us, for Morgan Stanley. And he holds a certificate in advanced financial planning from NYU, New York University, and has earned both the chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner designations. He's a member of the CFA Institute, the New York Society of Securities Analysts and Financial Planners Association, and he has, in fact, indeed, he caters very much to the top 1% of the rich and famous in the country. None of it, as I say, Sean Lean, has rubbed off on any of the Flanleys, but we want to wish you, welcome you on this on this day. I'd say that in the Lane household, as in every other household, many across the around the world, glued to the tremendous festive celebrations of the royal wedding today. You're very welcome.
Thanks, Adrian. Thanks very much. And of course, first, thank you very much for having me on the program. And you are right. My wife and my daughter did get up ridiculously early. My wife, Shello, and my daughter, Sarah, to watch the royal wedding. I went down to the basement to work out. It wasn't my...
All right. Well, you know, as I say, we only wish the new wedded couple all the luck and best wishes in the world. And that, for many of us, the only thing we have to decide is, do we have the ability, you know, to separate the political implications from the royalty. I wanted, though, ask you about, as co-founder of the St. Patrick's Day Foundation in New York with respect to the St. Patrick's Day Parade, how and why was it necessary to establish a foundation, St. Patrick's Day?
Yes, thank you, Adrian. That's an excellent question. Well, as you know, because you know the history and you know our community very well, the parade, which has done an extraordinary job of, you know, just being the oldest and largest parade in the world, has been an enormous undertaking for 250. We just had our 257th parade, as you know.
Yeah.
But the parade has always, up until the last number of years, not had any financial stability. They just raised just enough every year to hold the next year's parade, or that year's parade, I should say, and maybe a tiny surplus. So, you know, there was two major reasons we worked within the foundation to promote the financial stability of the parade, and we have taken care of that. The parade is in the best financial shape it's ever been in. And then, of course, the other challenge to the future of the parade is the lack of immigration, which I know is another topic, yeah, which is very close to your heart. And as a result, because we've had a lack of Irish immigration, we've had a lack of growth in some of our affiliated organizations, and then a lack of support for the wonderful causes that our affiliated organizations support. And I know you're involved in many of them yourself. I mean, what did we have, 50,000 visas last year? And I think the Irish got 124.
Yeah.
That's, I think it was Brian O'Dwyer, your cousin, that told me that number.
Yeah, that's 124. Indeed, you know, we hesitate to get into it because it's such a disgrace you know, that will have to be, as we've beaten it into the ground here, that will have to be a discussion for another day. Now, and you are and have been elected now as chairman of the St. Patrick's Day parade, and you were duly elected by the parade board. As the outgoing chair, John Leahy, has in fact indeed turned over you know, the gavel to you with a fairly good financial report. John Leahy has had, at best, a very contentious term, and you know, we can't just let the his retirement go without acknowledging numerous aspects which has kept the parade alive, not the least of which, in the absence of the president of Quinnipiac University, he single-handedly would have been the best fundraiser, which, you know, as we talk about the future of the parade, the financial support that he was able to, on very much on a personal level, draw to the you know, to the parade should not be in any way diluted as he steps down.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Adrian. I mean, he's done an extraordinary job, obviously, John, of funding a significant portion of the parade every year. You know, as you said, personally, through his connections, and then even more in Irish society, apart from the parade, also.
Oh, I know.
The wonderful Famine Museum, with the largest collection of famine art in the world, that he put together at Quinnipiac, which is touring now. I believe it's in Ireland.
It's in Ireland at the moment. And indeed, as we go back, there was, as we turn the clock back, in drawing attention to the horrific, as it's referred to mostly, as a famine, but it was the Great Hunger, of 1845 to 1852. That and numerous other issues, particularly with respect to the Irish, were kind of veiled, many of them kind of shoved under the bed, and by many considered to be somewhat of part of our disastrous past. Many would consider topics such as the famine, the Great Irish Hunger in Ireland, to be a taboo subject. Many also would feel, you know, that it would be better off left somewhere, you know, in the far room, in the dark. John Leahy, again, came to the fore with that, much to the chagrin of people on both sides of the Atlantic. You say, what in the hell doesn't he leave it alone? And in fact, in addition to establishing Ireland's Great Hunger Museum at Quinnipiac University, and in fact, Ireland's Great Hunger Institute, he brought the issue to the fore, and in fact tackled it head on to say, listen, this was not an act of God. This was an act of negligence, you know, of the British government. Totally rattled many here and on the other side.
Yeah, I think you make an excellent point, because as we know, you know, and certainly something that Quinnipiac helped greatly highlight and needed to be highlighted over the last number of years is mm-hmm. that there was no food shortage.
Yes.
Ireland exported food throughout the famine, as we know, and on Gartha Moor, the Great Hunger, I think promoting that name because the famine, everybody refers to it as the Great Famine, but yet we exported food, and you yourself, I know, have highlighted that cause many times on your program, but John has certainly helped put an exclamation point and underline what actually happened, really in a very meaningful way, and it continues to gain great recognition globally.
I want to talk a little bit about yourself. Born in New York, but yes. raised in Galway,
yes.
and so let me ask you a little bit about that, being raised in Galway, and
yes.
was it an issue with anybody, or did anybody care that in fact you were born in New York? Were you referred to as the Yankee boy, again, tongue in cheek, but what was it like growing up in Galway, in Ireland, as an American born?
Well, I mean, I can tell you, you know, arriving in South Galway in 1977, in the middle of nowhere, or 78, there was one television channel, as you know, RT Haines, which came on at 6 yeah. o'clock in the evening. So it was very much a culture shock, you know, for us. And yeah. it did, and we were referred to as the Yanks, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, still, it's funny. I mean, I spent so much time over there and came back over here in 1993. You consider that to be home, and that's where I feel I grew up. Even though I was, you know, 10 years old when I went there, it did have a tremendous effect, and it is certainly, I'm very biased and very pro-Galway, of course.
Yeah, well,
I love it.
We won't mention the GAA football game where somehow, through some fluke, Galway wound up ahead. But anyway, I know.
Well, my mother would be rooting for Mayo in that situation.
Absolutely. You won either way. But let me ask you a little bit about, obviously, education was
yes.
totally to the fore. Did you get that from your parents? Did some part of, you know, your brain say, you know, what I really want to do is not only to do well for myself, but I really want to get back to New York. I want to get back to America. I want to excel. I want to choose my career geared more towards America than Galway.
Well, this is really the land of opportunity, Adrian. You know, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Ireland at the time, 92, 93, there was a 20% plus unemployment rate in Galway.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you hit the 60% tax bracket at maybe $13,000 a year or something like that. I wasn't making anywhere near that. I was making, you know, £2, £2.50 an hour.
Mm.
And luckily enough, I was blessed to have the American passport. So even though I grew up, my brother was over here. And as my brother Patrick likes to remind me, he lent me the price of the airfare, as many of our brothers did. And, mm-hmm. you know, you told me your experience with the Dwyer family. You know,
right.
we arrive over and I had £5 in my pocket, Adrian. I didn't want to exchange it because I didn't want to pay the FX because it's all I had. So my whole scheme was to convince my brother to give me $10 for the £5, which he did, actually. But
yeah.
He still occasionally reminds me that he did lend me the airfare.
I'm sure. And even if you were to double it right now, that wouldn't do anything. If I were you, I wouldn't give him a penny. You know?
No, well, I did pay him back. but it took a couple of months. And, you know, my brother was working for Austin Delaney, a famous Mayo
oh,
man.
Indeed, famous Ballyharness man. Who?
Yeah, and Austin very graciously took me on as well. And I worked down there as a barman and a waiter in South Street Seaport with a
South
great
Street
Irish crew.
South Street Seaport, yeah. Now, how long did it take you? Here you are. You're now making a pile of money as
that.
A bartender. No, but as a bartender in comparison
yeah, yeah.
to what you left. School. Who was this a decision you made yourself? Listen, this is not what I plan to do. Because you've made tremendous strides. If you think, and for most people, maybe they don't know that Morgan Stanley, you know, is one of the huge Wall Street firms that indeed take care of those in the wealthy bracket. For you to today be the senior vice president of wealth management and a financial advisor for one of the largest investment companies in the world, you've come a long way. Was that something that in the back of your mind said, I'm going to go as far as I can go and I'm not going to settle for anything in between?
Well, yeah, and I mean, in fairness, both my mother and my father, I mean, my mother was always a great believer, and rest her soul, she passed away a couple of years ago, that I could do anything I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my father, to this day, I will say, is the hardest working man I've ever met. You know, there was never any question of him working every single holiday, whatever, double time, triple time, 7 days a week, day in, day out, never complained. You know, at one point, he had to come back over here when the tax rates went crazy in Ireland in the 80s. He came back over here with nothing, and he probably wasn't far off. I'm 50 now. He probably wasn't far off my age, and he had to rebuild everything again. He never complained, never made a peep. When Straightback was working in the union, he got a union job as an elevator operator in Rockefeller Center and worked all the hours of the clock and did it again for decades to, you know, build back up again without ever saying a word. So again, you know, both my parents were certainly ones to push.
Yeah. And in fact, that was something which was not unusual for, let's say, half the immigrants who came from Ireland. In other areas, parents were indeed much more concerned about how to put bread on the table. And I think many of us would assume that we were grown for export during a very good part of the last century.
Well, and as you know, you come over here with nothing, and you and I spoke about how you came over and yeah. myself before, and you have no choice but to go forward.
Yeah, and especially if whoever is sponsoring you here,
yeah.
Over to here, may turn out, as in fact it was in my case, that, you know, my uncle, Paul O'Dwyer, took, you know, all of us, the Flannelys, the Durkins, the Burns, sponsored all of us to come here. And indeed, all of the, much of what we knew them as in visiting Ireland, great singers and great celebrations in Ireland. It didn't take long when you came here to find out, indeed America was a place and continues to be a place that has tremendous opportunity. The American dream is there for those who pursue it. And in fact, that's what we were taught to do. There wasn't much downtime or sightseeing when we came here. We came here to work, and that's
it. Right. Yeah, and there's always a helping hand. I mean, you know, Austin, obviously.
Yeah.
Paul O'Dwyer would go into, you know, South Street Seaport once every week or two to eat lunch.
Yeah.
And I remember him being a very kind man with a great tipper. I mean, first, I can tell you, he always sat in a specific spot by the fire, which I first found annoying when I had to serve him. because he had very set, like Austin, you know, there's a certain way he wanted things done, but he was very gracious. He often tipped more than the actual price of the food. And he didn't eat the food. He wasn't somebody with a huge appetite. And he was very kind. He was always asking questions. What are you doing? What did you study? What do you want to do now? What are you going to do after this? But Austin as well. And in fairness, that's how I ended up getting into finance, was a customer who came into Austin's place.
Yeah.
And we started talking, and he recommended me in to a major Wall Street firm for a very junior position. And, you know, I mean, I got hired for the, you know, wonderful sum after doing my postgraduate degree of $300 a week, but it was a fortune because I was making 80 pounds a week in Ireland. So
that was my
chance. And it was
he helped many. And for those
he did.
At South Street, Seaport, Austin, that was yet one more tremendous adventure. For Austin Delaney in going down into the area again of Wall Street of wealth and providing and creating one of the most indeed a restaurant that was not exclusively catering to the Irish, but from once you went through the door there to the restaurant and to the bar area. You know that indeed there was a very Irish atmosphere. Let me, another time, and when you take over as chairman of St. Patrick's Day Parade, perhaps we'll talk again. But I do want people and listeners to know that my guest, Sean Lane, again, Senior Vice President, Wealth Management, for Morgan Stanley. Best way to get in touch with him is to, you can send him an email actually, or contact Sean, S-E-A-N dot Lane, L-A-N-E, at morganstanley.com. And Sean, thank you for joining us, and we wish you, of course,
well, Adrian, I just want to say a big thanks. And of course, I don't, you know, I'm not here to promote any business thing or anything at all.
Yeah.
No, it's more promoting the cause and the parade. And I just want to say hello to my children, Sarah and Ryan, and my beautiful wife, Shello.
And of course, and could you
and
let
all
them,
your listeners, of course,
could
all the parade.
Could you let them back to the television, please?
I will. I mean, they're probably already watching something.
Yeah, and because I don't want you dragging me down with you, you know.
I blame you. Thanks so much.
Thank
a great
you.
Honor, Adrian, really.
God bless. Okay.
Thank you.
Sean Lane there, the newly elected chairman of the St. Patrick's Day Parade. And friends, you are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com. Executive producer Anya Sheridan, who indeed she rules here with a big stick because the 11 o'clock news is now not going to be at 11. But then I want to tell you, over the decades, as the news came,